Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
I could order you to go if I wanted to.
Please don't make me leave. Not yet. This is my home. When my dad and I came here, this place was just an abandoned shell. He turned it into something. Everywhere I look, it's like I see a part of him. If I leave, I won't have anything left of it.
Stay a while longer if you want to, but you have to promise me. When the time comes and I tell you to go, you'll do it.
All right. I think that we're all ready to go.
It's got Star Trek. It's got Star Trek.
That's right. Hey Jesse, you do that in the song.
I do that in the show. In the
you just did that all a cappella right now. Yeah.
It's working.
It's got Star Trek.
Okay. We'll get right into it because we have a fun or interesting episode.
I guess we were just lucky this time.
Oh, interesting episode this week. Okay.
This is probably the funniest episode of Star Trek we have done in a long time.
One thing I'm looking forward to is I'm very curious about Dan's selection of audio clips this week.
I never felt more alone in all my life.
Okay, all right. Well, for those of you who were not aware via some other means, the episode of It's Got Star Trek that you're listening to currently will be covering Star Trek Deep Space Nine's Season 4 masterpiece, The Visitor.
You see, I'm dying.
Okay, you know that.
A barrel of laughs.
That made me think of the...
that was just the first one.
That made me think of the I Think You Should Leave sketch with... I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson, the sketch with Bob Odenkirk, where he's... Where he's like, triples is best. And then he's like, you know, my wife, she's a supermodel, but she's dying. Like something about that line reading was...
You see, I'm dying.
Triples is best. Okay, anyway. So this is episode 224 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. And yes, we will be discussing The Visitor. And yes, I think that's going to be very interesting to see how this fits in with our normal brand.
Yeah.
I never felt more alone in all my life.
Well, we've done serious episodes before, so we'll see how we do with this one. But
yes.
But first, just a couple of things.
News 'em up.
News 'em ups, yeah, not much going on, but we do have
on the road.
We have a fun activity, a fun 'em up, a second break fun 'em up to look out for.
Oh, look out!
Related, sort of, to this episode, a little wholesome activity that we'll do.
Oh wow,
which will be great.
Look at,
yeah.
You don't need to be that worried.
Look at,
what's going on?
Well, you'll find out in the second break.
You didn't tell us about this before.
No, I never tell you about
We take a good hour and a half before each episode to go through all of our notes together to make sure they're all synced up properly.
And the hardest stuff to script out are the
ambush 'em ups.
Are the arguments between particularly between Dan and I.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of overlap and over talking and stuff like that. It's really hard to like mark that out.
We're really good actors.
Well, I mean, both of you have the advantage of your musical background, I think, helps you deal with sort of discordant, you know,
simultaneities.
See, when you're jamming with someone, it's like you're reading their mind.
Okay.
Sometimes.
All right. It's like you're one with each other. It's like sex. It's like you're having sex with each other. When you're playing music, when you're not jamming, exactly. When you're jamming, it's like you're jamming each other.
Okay. All right. We're off to a good start.
When your entire fist.
Yeah. Jam. Okay. So, yes.
What are you saying?
We will have that fun, wholesome activity in the second break. So, something to watch for in case we fuck up this first break. Mm-hmm. All right. Follow 'em ups. does that delight you?
And
Dan?
Then afterwards, we're going to do podcast em ups even more. More podcast em ups.
I guess. Well,
then we'll do talk em ups.
Actually, we do.
And then we'll do wrap em ups.
No, we do have a mail em up this week. A brief mail em up. Right. Mail em up, nevertheless. But if the first, the follow em up. You know, we do like these episodes of It's Got Star Trek to be evergreen, mm-hmm. right? We like them to be evergreen so you can hop in and listen to any episode in any order. You don't got to listen to them in order.
We seem to muddle through somehow.
But that being said, do you know what else is always green? The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, this will be brief.
Oh gosh.
This will be... No, hey Dan, this is
a brief bit of rubbing it in.
We're trying to cover all the bases.
This is called rubbing it in.
No. No. We have over the past couple of weeks that for those who are just hopping into this episode and haven't listened to the last few episodes.
Snippity snap.
There has been this controversy that's come up about the lyrics to the theme song, the opening theme song from the 1987 television program Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh.
In which many people believe that the line is Raphael is cool but rude. And Dan and a lot of other people believe actually
well,
the line
for giving
is
me that at least.
Cool but crude.
What are you saying?
Well, you said it. You they're a little biased. You were like where everybody thinks it's cool but rude.
I didn't say everybody.
And then you said, and then Dan plus some other people. So they think it's cool but crude. That was a little bit weighted.
That is a straw man em up.
Straw.
Because I did not say that.
What
not,
are you saying?
I did not say that. But we
are
did
you sure?
on Facebook. One of the our followers on Facebook, Emmanuel Croft, sent a video.
Emmanuel Kant is a real piss ant who is
very
rarely
stable.
Stable.
I digger is a boozy beggar who drink you under the table.
Something soon.
David Hume could consume.
Is this like Monty Python?
And Rene Descartes is drunk and fun. I drink, therefore I am.
That's not a thing. Socrates
couldn't. Nietzsche wouldn't.
Well, there's multiple
Nietzsche
verses.
Nietzsche wouldn't.
Socrates couldn't. He teaches about the raising of the wrist.
A lovely little thing about a bugger's when he's pissed.
Yes. Okay. That's the philosopher's song from the venerable Monty Python.
Yes.
Wasn't there like one where they had like the German philosophers playing soccer with the Greek philosophers?
Well, that was a sketch, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the Greek guys like kicked it into his own goal or something.
All right, you're throwing me off here.
What are your plans?
Emmanuel Croft sent in this video. It's an audio video. The video doesn't matter.
It's an audio video.
What they're doing, all the video is titled Cool But Rude, and all it does is slow. It keeps playing it over and over. It's slower and slower. Rates and let's just have a quick listen. It's not long.
Raphael is cool but rude.
Give me a break.
But rude.
Raphael is cool but rude.
Slower.
Give me a break. Raphael is cool but rude.
But rude.
Raphael is cool but rude.
But rude.
Raphael is cool but rude.
Break.
Raphael is cool but rude.
Break.
Now it makes it harder to understand what that was.
So I personally still hear cool but rude. However, people do hear cool but crude.
What kind
when
of people?
It's slowed down.
What kind
internet
of people?
People.
Internet people.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is.
I don't know if this is one of those blue dress gold dress situations.
this is some lore to back it up. Where the sequel to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the 2014 live-action one with the scary Ninja Turtles.
I've heard tell of what you're about to talk about.
Out of the Shadows specifically says, cool but crude.
Yes.
And where do you think they got those lyrics from? They probably got them from the original source.
Perhaps the singer on the original source misread the original lyrics. The lyrics stayed put, but the singer saying cool but rude because it sounded better.
So which is because
cool but crude in that particular musical arrangement, the having an alliteration there does not help. Mm-hmm. It's not an alliteration friendly line in the song.
So which is more accurate then, how it was originally written or how it was sang?
I'm a how it was saying.
I was a how it was saying guy.
If that's where you want to talk about, I'm a how it was saying kind of guy.
Tell me how it was.
Good listener.
that's damn right. All right. I think it's, you know, I just wanted to put it out there. Thank you, Emmanuel, for sending that in. I did find that interesting. I will say I was intrigued by slowing down the thing, but I'm still on Team Rude.
But there are whole articles about songs, tons of songs, popular songs that are misquoted all the time.
Yes.
Like they're Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Yes. It's the girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
Yes.
Some have said it's the girl with Kaleidos Goes By.
Yes.
But only see, you those, said that.
Those people are
only
lunatics.
You said that.
Anyone who thinks that is crazy. And I mean in the colloquial, you know, not in the clinical sense.
So, well, okay. Well, I'm going to say it goes, what's most important was what was intended. And
so you're all about authorial intent.
But you can say
superseding the how a product of art is received.
I mean, when you put it like that, it sounds kind of stodgy. But
no, it's a perfectly reasonable position.
But you
to
could
have.
Say make cool but rude. You know, the C can get lost. Cool but rude. Cool but rude.
Okay.
I don't think that's what's happening.
Cool but rude.
For the audience at home, when Dan rude. Is, what you're missing out on is that Dan, in attempting to do this. Looks like he's about to throw up all over the place. He's he's gagging on a ball of rice.
Sometimes those cuss sounds get lost. Cool, but good.
Good. What are you doing with your shoulders? Why is this like a full body, full body exercise? Jesus
Christ. Long Johnson. Long Johnson.
Long Johnson.
It was a pleasure. Okay. Good listener.
Okay.
You're joking.
All right.
Pleasure
all right.
is mine.
Let's move.
You're a good listener. The pleasure is mine.
Let's
You're
move
a
along.
Good listener. Pleasure is mine.
Yes.
You're a good listener. Pleasure is mine. You're a good listener. Pleasure is mine.
Was this
You're
under a beat?
Good listener. Pleasure is mine. You're a good
Sleazy
listener.
Beat.
Pleasure is mine. You're a good listener. Pleasure is mine. You're a good listener.
All right.
No, that wasn't put up. That was an impromptu beat.
Impromptu beat. I thought so because it was in the first break, and usually you save those to the. To later on. Right. But there's nothing wrong with that. But I do want to move along.
No, I'm glad you... No, I sighed, but I'm glad you brought it up, Patrick. It seems like there is still no resolution, but I will say that, yes, that sound file does make it sound... It gives the illusion of sounding like rude.
All right. Okay.
So...
All right. So...
It sounds like he says rude.
Mail him up.
It does sound like that.
Mail him up.
So I can't argue with what it sounds like.
Well, here's the thing. What I find interesting about this is a lot of people, when you're reading the comments and stuff on that and other videos, a lot of people say like slowing it down, actually now they hear crude.
Oh, fuck.
Where they didn't before.
On that last one, it could have been
crude. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crude.
But up to that, it was clearly rude.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. When it was at normal speed, it was clearly rude.
Mail-em-ups. We have a very brief mail-em-up. It's an email from Charles.
Hi, Charles.
And Charles says, "You guys are great. Keep up the good work. Baba Booey." It's like, all right, thank all right. you, Charles.
Really? That was a real one?
That was a real one. We like all manner of communication, whether it's brief or maybe not so brief, whether it references 1980s shock jocks or not. We're fine with that. Baba Booey, back to you. Charles, thank you very much, and we appreciate that you appreciate everything that's going on.
How does it feel being in charge of our days?
So Dan is making a Charles in charge joke.
I felt how weak it was going into it, so I just sort of went.
Charles in charge was Scott Baio.
Yeah.
You got to try things
Scott
out.
Scott Baio.
You got to try things out.
Yeah. I'm sure that anyone named Charles has probably heard that before and quite tired of it.
Well, if you would like to send us.
I'm lucky because I have the name Dan. So everyone says like, hey, Dan the something man.
Yeah.
Dan. But back when Roseanne.
Are you sure you're lucky?
I'm positive I'm lucky. Back when there was the show Roseanne was on, there was a commercial. There was a commercial they always played where Dan Connor. Dan Connor played by John Goodman. There was an ad where he was always saying like, Dan, the drywall man. That ad always played. And so
for a while, ad on the TV?
On the TV. And for a while, everyone would always say, Dan, the drywall man. And
I thought that was just something he said when he was trying to get that drywall job.
But it was on an ad.
He's saying an ad for the show Roseanne.
Ad for the show Roseanne.
You see, Jesse, there would be...
Oh, an ad for this show itself.
There would be ads for the shows.
What did you think
shows?
It was, I was saying?
I didn't know what you were talking about. It wasn't making any sense to me. I thought you meant like a fake commercial for
It was,
business,
anyways...
Dubious drywall
doobie,
business.
Smoking doobies. No, it was... yeah, so people called me that for a while. Dan, the this man. Dan, the that man. That's pretty cool. The only time it wasn't cool is when kids in like third grade would call me Danny Fanny. That wasn't cool.
Oh, no. Who said that? That sucks.
Mean kids would say that kind of stuff.
Is that like Montessori or something?
That was first grade. I don't remember what they said to me.
Okay.
Montessori kids.
I don't remember what they said.
If you'd like to send us an email on topic or otherwise.
Yeah, otherwise.
We made fun of them. I remember this one kid got made fun of because he referred, because we in Montessori school, you had requirements. But he kept calling it work. He's like, I got to do my work. And we'd be like, what are you talking about? They're requirements. Because in Montessori lingo, you don't have work. You have requirements.
You were hanging out with
them. That sounds a little bit.
Pieces of shit.
That's Montessori school.
The semantic asshole. Yeah. I'm glad you grew out of that.
No, I don't think I just witnessed the making fun of traumatization in Montessori school was when I sat down with these two friends that I'd always hang out with, and I sat down, I was like, hey guys, how's it going? And they're like, Dan, we think we want to take a break from being your friend for a while.
Oh no. Who said that?
Oh my god,
some kid named Bronco.
I knew Bronco.
I heard about that.
And his friend Ross. Bronco and Ross.
I've heard about this duo.
I know, actually, was it Ross or was it someone else? I don't know. It was definitely Bronco.
I remember hearing about it, just being like, I can't believe I'm hearing that.
Yeah, we might have to. We are in the process of putting together a Patreon type situation, and maybe we'll have to have Dan recount some of his childhood traumas.
Yeah.
That was a treat.
Oh my God. All right. Yes, we would like to get to this. But I also would like to get to the fact that if you would like to send us an email, like Charles did, you can write us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. Send emails there. But of course, if you'd like to send us a voicemail, either send us an MP3 or go to itsgotstartrek.com/record and you can record up to 90 seconds and we'll play it on the air. All right. That, I think, concludes.
I don't understand.
Oh, all the main business. All the main business we get right back into The Visitor.
That's an exhale. This place is a good beat.
No, it's not bad.
Nog!
Right, okay, this is working out so far.
There's only one first time for everything, isn't it? And only one last time too.
Nog.
Middle-aged Nog was kind of funny.
Handle it.
Still short.
Nog.
You're a middle-aged Dan.
I'm not asking chicks
too.
To chew my food for me anymore.
Oh, yeah. The fucking, was it the...
I have to admit, I've been more popular with women since I stopped asking them to do that.
I don't know. There's something about the delivery of that line that was really great.
But did you notice he said popular? Play it again.
I have to admit, I've been more popular with women popular. Since I stopped asking
isn't that,
them
isn't that
to
weird?
Do that.
Do you think that was
that
a flub line,
weird.
But like everything else was good about the take, so they just kept it? Well, I noticed that while watching it. You know, popular. I think I remember noticing that in the past.
Maybe it's a Ferengi accent.
Well, there was a sound I meant to play last week of Voyager's Random Thoughts, which was a weird mispronounced line. Well, I wouldn't even say it's mispronounced. It was a weird pronunciation.
Was it random?
So the same question goes for this line last week by Tuvok.
There are various Vulcan techniques which could help you increase your self-control. Your self-control. Your self-control.
Isn't that weird? I said self.
Your self-control.
Self.
Self.
Your self-control. Your self-control. Your self-control.
Okay.
Your self-control. Your self-control. Your self-control.
Doesn't that sound weird?
It does.
And yes. Ironically, you haven't taken the message to heart.
I have to admit, I've been more popular with women since I stopped asking
popular.
Them to
do popular.
Popular.
Oh, you made a diss on me.
No.
Handle it.
Okay. Yeah, he might have said that. Now,
yes.
Ferengi do that as well? They get the women to chew their food for him? Because that just seems like they're disrespecting.
They chew up the bugs.
That just seems like they're disrespecting themselves when they're getting someone else to chew their food for them, because that's disgusting. That's fucking gross.
They live in the mud.
Well, I mean, you think that's gross because of your culture.
No, it is.
What about birds chewing up stuff and feeding it to little baby birds?
It is absolutely and objectively gross.
You would
a cross section of Alpha Quadrant civilizations agree.
Exactly. But you got to leave open the possibility that, you know, there's cultures like, it's like, remember the important lesson we learned from that episode of Very Short Treks called The Worst Contact.
Yeah.
You gotta respect all cultures, no matter how foul, no matter how many boogers they wipe on their walls.
Oh, no.
That was fucking gross.
That was a good episode of the podcast.
No, no.
Our discussion of Very Short Treks, lots of listeners, because it's a good episode. Yeah. You should go listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
That was a funny one.
Love is the answer.
Yes, it is.
It doesn't matter your species, if you're old generation or new, if you're animated on twos or sixes, love is the answer. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And Grayson let us know about how the
animated
on the twos and the sixes with them. You learn a lot in that episode of It's Got Star Trek that covers the Very Short Treks.
We believe boogers represent our essence and bind us to all things.
I mean, I guess you don't have to listen to it because we're doing it again.
We're just going
to
do it again.
I have to admit, I've been more popular with women since I stopped asking them to do that.
Poplia.
All right. Visitor. Michael Taylor.
Okay, fine. I guess it's not that. Okay, I admit that other some species, it's not gross to chew their food for them. But it just seems like as a human, if you were to disrespect somebody, could you be like if you had someone in your captivity and you're like, I'm gonna disrespect you, would you get them to chew your food for you?
Yeah.
Okay, Jesse answered before you even finished asking the question. Right. So he's given it some prior thought.
Yeah. Just saying, like, if you're not...
That's classic disrespect.
If you're a species that doesn't normally do that, you're just disrespecting yourself.
Okay. I don't have an adequate answer. I'll have to think on it. Maybe I can get back to you next week.
Where do you come up with this stuff, man?
Michael Taylor, he wrote this.
He wrote a bunch of Voyager. Right?
He did. He wrote mostly on Voyager, but he wrote
some other
four. I think four episodes of Deep Space Nine. Importantly, he wrote In the Pale Moonlight,
right. And
he wrote Things Past.
Oh. Write some heavy shit,
which are two great and heavy and great episodes. So this episode, widely considered one of the best episodes of Deep Space Nine, and even in many lists, one of the best episodes of Star Trek. And so is In the Pale Moonlight.
It was like a play.
I mean, this was an excellent episode. Of course, it was a wonderful, great, awesome episode. To say it's the best episode of Star Trek is kind of weird, because, like you just said, Jesse, it's like a play. It's like its own sort of thing. It's almost not even. It is Star Trek.
It's like its own world of things.
It's a new kind of Star Trek.
So it's kind of difficult to say like Sad it's Trek. The best. It's just like a really...
It's a new thing called Upsetting Trek. We invented it in the 90s.
I don't know.
Let's upset our viewers. Difficult Let's make them very, very Treks. Fucking upset.
So this is an episode that Google marked as episode 2, but Paramount Plus and other places too actually mark it as 3, because Way of the Warrior, some places mark that as 1 and 2.
I've marked it as 2 because the 2, again...
In Paramount Plus, on Paramount Plus, it doesn't even say Way of the Warrior is episode 1 and 2. It just says episode 1 is Way of the Warrior, and it says episode 3, then it skips to 3 on this one, so
it's
confusing.
They're
not even consistent.
We did Way of the Warrior, by the way. I can't remember which episode, but we discussed that.
Son of a bitch.
So that's another example of your Paramount Plus is numbering them differently than my Paramount.
Did it happen again with you? What does yours say?
Episode 2.
You guys
keep, what?
You guys, okay, look.
I gotta see this.
You guys keep freaking out about this, and I do think that the explanation is out there, which is that Dan is using native Paramount Plus, and Jesse is accessing Paramount Plus via Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I've never done
that. I think that's what we determined last time.
I've never done the thing where you access one service by another service.
Neither have I.
And so I don't, but my assumption was...
Jesse's willing to risk that.
Yes, I know. Wait. Let me finish what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, I have never done this, but my assumption was that it would be the same interface as
a fair assumption
because why would they have different output for different because they're both just Paramount Plus in the
because
end.
All the streaming companies are run by morons.
Yeah,
that's why
it seems that way.
Now maybe this is not a function of that, but I think even though we might be editorializing it, I think we can still say that. Okay, but Michael Taylor was inspired to do this episode by, there was that story about J.D. Salinger, who's a famously reclusive author. Mm-hmm. No, he would never do interviews, didn't talk to anybody. And then one day back, I think it was
anybody, not even his kids?
I don't know, maybe his kids, but nobody public. He wasn't a public figure. But one day in 1980 or something, some high school kid just showed up to his house and was like, "Can I interview you?" And did this super in-depth interview with J.D. Salinger.
I remember.
Okay. So that's kind of the framework to this story to get things started, mm-hmm. which I thought that's a pretty cool inspiration.
Yeah.
And it creates a nice little framework. Cause I guess my overriding point here is this is one of those examples that we touched on a little bit last week, how Voyager often would be plot focused and then just adjust the characterizations as needed to tell the specific story. They had a plot in mind. Mm-hmm. They had maybe a specific message, and then they're just like, okay, we'll move the chess pieces around to tell that story. This is an example on Deep Space Nine of them using the characters and coming up with cool things that would happen and make sense for those characters, right? Mm-hmm. So all of this is character, but all the plot and stuff, all the exposition and gobbledygook and stuff like that about the this, that, and the other thing, it's irrelevant because they're just really telling a story about Jake and his dad.
They even got Tony Todd, who is 6'5", and Cirroc Lofton is pretty tall as well.
Yeah,
Tony Todd has been in some other Star Trek.
Oh yeah, he played Kern. He played Worf's brother, Kern, and he played the Alpha Hirogen in an episode of Voyager called Prey. It's a very good episode, actually, as I recall.
He was in some movies too.
Candyman.
He was in The Crow.
Most famously, Candyman. But yeah, The Crow. Tony Todd's an amazing. He's an amazing actor.
We're going to get a second chance.
He got to play Kern later in this season, and I saw on Memory Alpha there was a quote from him being all super delighted that he got to play two different characters mm-hmm. on Deep Space Nine in one season.
It was me.
Yes,
and then the person that plays the visitor, young woman that's visiting.
Yeah,
him
Rachel Robinson.
That's the daughter of the guy that plays Garrick.
Andrew
You're
Robinson.
You're going to cut the cord, aren't you? It's still called Cisco's.
you're
still called Cisco's.
You're starting to dig deep now, Dan. You run out of all the clips. You're just getting into the, she's just stating facts.
And you can miss it if you don't open your eyes.
But yes, Rachel Robinson is the daughter of Andrew Robinson. She also, by the way...
You're joking.
She also, by the way, was apparently a leading contender for the character of Ezri.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I read that. That's right.
She lost out, of course, lost that role to Nicole DeBoer.
I can't imagine what that must have been like for you.
But I can see, given how, she performed in this episode, I can see how she would be considered for that role. She did have that really that earnestness. Mm-hmm. That I don't know. There's something really cool. I don't think she did a lot of other acting after this. I tried to look her up. She did a few things.
It was hard to find.
But I thought she was really good in this. I think that's part of what makes this episode work so well. Is basically everybody is doing a really good job in their performance.
I'm doing a lot of reading, to see how it's done, to see how it's done, to see how it's done, to see how it's done. I'm doing a lot of reading. I'm doing a lot of reading, to see how it's done, to see how it's done.
Oh, is there another punchline to that?
No.
I'm doing a lot of reading. I'm doing a lot of reading, to see how it's done, to see how it's done.
Handle live.
Nog!
Tony Todd, I think, works really well as Jake Sisko, in part because he shares that sort of I don't know. There's a musicality to the way, to his performance that matches well with Avery Brooks, and Sisko has that. And it's also a plausible extension of Jake, you know, an older Jake. You can buy into it, even though he's a little bit hulking. You know, I know Zarag Lavin is pretty tall, but you know, then Tony Todd is wearing Jake style clothes, yeah. Except he's just this massive.
He's got
guy.
Big old hands.
Yeah, big monster broad shoulders.
There was one scene where he was like started walking away. He goes, "No, I was left with no choice but to try to get on with my life. Mm-hmm. I went to Earth, drifted around, and eventually ended up studying writing at the Pennington School." When he says, "I went to Earth," he starts walking away from Earth. Melanie, mm-hmm. and he starts flapping his left hand, and it kind of looks like he's waving away a fart. Did you notice that?
You know?
I noticed that he was like doing some funny movements, but I didn't think about fart.
Yeah, he did.
I was like, is he okay?
I just interpreted that as
nerve damage.
As him sort nerve of damage. Him sort of physicalizing his disdain at the his remembering the disdain he had or the lack of interest he had in the formal study of writing at Pennington.
Oh, I didn't
given
that,
that thing. So I thought that was sort of like a physical representation of him being like, But you know, you're right. It could
also Jesse thought it was nerve damage.
It could be nerve damage, and it could be that he was waving away a fart.
He was. There was an unrealistic
moment. Maybe there was a bug in there.
There was one unrealistic moment at the end there, and that's when he was sitting on the ottoman at the very end, because, like, look, when my grandfather, like, and this isn't a joke, like, he could barely stand up from the couch on his own. We had to help him up the couch, and he could still move around basically fine.
Did you get one of them lift chairs?
They had a, near the end, they had like a lift, oh, near the end, this is getting really,
that's terrible, man. Terrible.
I never felt more alone in all my life. It won't be long now. You see.
Okay, but anyway, your grandfather would not be able to sit on an ottoman. Is
like,
that what you're
saying? That wasn't even just a regular old sofa. That was an ottoman, and when you see him sit, like his knees are like way up to his face.
That's true.
Like, there's no way a man that age, I think, could easily stand up like that.
I agree with you, but on the other hand, I also thought that that was a good way to evoke the physicality of Jake's of Sirach Lofton's Jake, because Jake with his big long legs and long arms was often sitting in a similar position where he kind of looks all like spider like
because he looks super tall, and Jake Sirach Lofton looked like super tall in this episode.
Yeah, he's like all extra tall and extra spindly. But he
has
but,
better outfits when he's older.
But all of this is to say that it's time for a break.
You keep on saying there's no more time.
No, there's no more time in the first break, but there'll be plenty of time in the second break and the third break.
Thank you all right. for everything.
Okay, great. We'll be right back to talk about this hilarious episode.
Promise me you'll do that.
Okay, we'll be right back.
And we're back.
Okay, we're back. According to Jesse, we're back. Hey,
that's right. I called it.
Jesse
this
has
week.
Declared us back.
At the beginning of the episode, I was kind of like, "Oh man, I'm remembering parts of this episode. I wish I got to watch it for the first time, because when I saw him at first, I was like, you know what? I bet that's Jake. The reason I know that is because I've seen this episode before. And then like 2 minutes in, he's like. Yeah. She's like, "You're Jake." And I was like,
And then later she's like, "I read your stories and immediately wished I hadn't read them so I could read them again for the first time."
Yeah.
You were lamenting that you weren't able to do the thing that we all dream we could do, which is do selective memory engram removal so that we could re-enjoy for the first time certain things.
Well, my point was more...
There's only one first time.
There's only one first time.
Only one first time.
Handle it one last time.
Well, what I was lamenting was that, like, I thought when I started watching the episode, what I thought is I was like, they're going to reveal at the end that this is Jake Sisko. That's what I thought when I watched it. I was like, oh, they're going to reveal at the end that this is Jake Sisko. And the reason I know he's Jake Sisko now is because of, like, some old memory I had, but I was completely wrong is my point. My point is they tell you from the very beginning that he's Jake
Sisko.
Yeah,
because they have a picture of him and his father.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, so I wasn't as smooth. But you know what I did notice on the second viewing that I didn't notice on the first one was that he actually poisons himself at the beginning of the episode.
Yes,
and I didn't notice that at that point, which
he
I thought
gives himself that fast acting. Well, now you know, not that fast acting.
They're not so clear as to like how he knows that Sisko is. I mean, they talked about the whole, like, you know,
he got his PhD in temporal
which is interesting because, like, there was the whole episode where he was supposed to shadow O'Brien, and that was when
Chief O'Brien.
That's when they found when he was like, I find engineering really boring. But like, suddenly he got like way into
his dad.
Well, it's probably strictly speaking, he wasn't studying engineering; he was studying temporal mechanics and He didn't have to build something, is what I'm saying. But he needed to understand the theory behind it.
I think the implication was that he was less into the sciences kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree with that. It is at least, you know, now he has a motivation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, in and of itself, it's an interesting concept where
somebody
has a new motivation based off of some, you know, in this case, a crazy sci-fi temporal subspace.
It wasn't really clear that how he knew that Sisko was going to be there that day at that time.
Well, he did talk about how, especially with Dax's help, the calculation of when these things
would happen. Okay, now there's another question I have, because I think when he was talking about to Dax about they knew he was coming back.
Yes.
They were trying to recreate the scenario with the wormhole.
Yes.
And they knew when the wormhole was coming back. Now, they talked about
the inversion.
The Dax ruined his life by figuring out the pattern, basically. Because, like, if he thought his dad was dead, then, like, it wouldn't be such a big deal. Because it's like, okay, he's dead. I can't do anything about it. But because he knows he's alive, he spends the rest of his life, like, chasing it. And it ruins his writing career. Ruins his marriage. Basically ruins his life, basically.
Yeah.
Dax finds out the pattern to his appearances. So are we to understand that him recreating the scenario with the wormhole, that is outside of the pattern? Like, is when Dax found the pattern, was that not including the wormhole scenario? Because you see what I'm saying? Like, the wormhole scenario wasn't the pattern.
Yeah.
That was just, they knew it was happening. That was separate from the pattern.
Well, I think this goes back to what I was saying before, which is this is one of those episodes where it's implicit in the episode that you not care about the specifics because they're aiming for the character
thing. I know.
Because none of it's going to make any, like, sense.
No, I know.
I know you're not meaning it in, like, a dickish, like,
No, and the
way.
Thing is it's like, it's always, I know, I understand that, like, the focus is supposed to be on the characters and not the science. But the point is they said some certain things.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm trying to understand what they meant by the thing. He says, we also realized that there was a pattern to his appearances. They were governed by fluctuations in the wormhole's subspace field.
Yes.
So the next time she was appeared, I'd be an old man.
Yes.
And so when the wormhole came back, he would have been 58 years old.
Yes.
Because he was 18 the first time.
Which he would consider an old man at the age he hears that's the time when the. Because if you want to get technical, I'm
guessing the only thing that makes sense to me is that the pattern she was talking about represents when Jake saw Sisko that day he died, and that going to the wormhole was outside of the pattern. It was just him recreating the scenario.
I think more specifically, it was by going to the wormhole, they could pull their attempt was to pull Sisko out. They were opening up.
That's what I'm
that
saying.
Subspace thing. I agree. Yeah, that's different.
It's outside of the pattern. Yeah. They're recreating.
I'm just saying that in this case, all they're trying to set up is the problem that for Jake in this scenario is that he knows that his father is still alive, and that's what fucks everything up for him.
Yeah.
And I think the goal, if I have to guess what the thematic goal of the episode is it's in favor of the idea of letting go of people so that you can live your life.
Well, yes.
By showing the alternative, which is like, here's what happens.
Right.
And so when people are like, oh, I wonder, blah, 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 blah. It's like, no, you have to get past that, because here's what happens if the alternative is true, right? He is fully,
son of a bitch.
Because Jake is fully justified in doing the things he does. Like, that's the thing I find interesting about this episode, is everyone's like, you got to forget about it. You got to not think about this anymore. Even Sisko is saying that to Jake because he cares about Jake and he wants him to have a good life. But Jake is like, but the problem is you're fucking right there. What do you mean? This is Star Trek. We're supposed to solve the problems. And I'm not able to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I
think that one paragraph that I was just reading could have been worded a little more clearly. They could have said something to the effect of, Dax figured out the pattern to his appearances, but I also discovered that if I recreated the scenario, I could make him appear sooner or something. They could have added a couple words to make it a little more clear.
It is kind of interesting in this episode where there are points where they don't they don't use exposition, and you've just provided an example of that. And there's other points where they're just have, you know, he's like, oh, so that's what happened, blah, 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 and then this happened, and then, you know, and they're right, this is, we're just going to state it outright.
I lost my favorite pen, and I couldn't get any work done without it. Look at me.
Look at me. All right, so let's have a little bit of fun.
Promise me you'll do that. Promise me.
I felt vaguely ridiculous.
I missed so much.
You see, I'm dying.
You still have time to make a better life for yourself.
Yeah.
Because you want to be a writer someday.
Wasn't that sound a little condescending when he said that? Oh, it's
a little bit.
Because you want to be a writer someday. Oh, hoity-toity writer someday.
Well, it is.
Oh, you want to be a writer. You want to be a writer someday. Okay. Hey, you want to be a writer someday.
Dan's been working on his mid-Atlantic 1950s character, 1930s, 40s.
It's still called Cisco's.
You still want to be a writer someday, huh?
You're gonna cut the cord, aren't you?
Okay. Let's take a little brief break for fun.
Already? It's only been 10 minutes.
No, it hasn't. We're well into the second break.
No, we're 10 minutes. We took it at the 30-minute mark. Now it's 39 minutes. We're literally 9 minutes.
You gotta
minutes.
Keep things rolling, man.
I know, but it's the second break fun 'em up, and so it has to happen during the second break. So this is the second break.
So we're taking another break?
No. We're not. Okay. You've misinterpreted. We're not taking a break.
This isn't a break with a capital B.
No.
This is
what we've been calling. Taking, we've been referring to the second break, Funimub.
I thought it was a treat.
Where we try to do something, you know, a little fun. You remember the cave facts?
Oh yeah,
that's one of my favorite things we've ever done. Is the cave facts?
The cave facts. Yeah, I remember the cave facts.
All right. So this is kind of like that. I've been doing this
now
frequently.
It's time to cut you loose.
You might have noticed that this has been a kind of a new feature we've tried to add into the most of the episodes. Anyway, okay. So
buttons.
For this episode's fun 'em up, I wanted to know a little bit more about visitors, right? So Jake has a visitor. This episode is called The Visitor, which of course could mean Melanie, the young aspiring author character who's visiting Jake. But really, we know the title is referring to Cisco coming back. He keeps visiting. Jake is being visited upon by the specter of his father.
The specter.
My sweet boy.
So I wanted to learn more about how do you treat visitors? How do you deal
Talk
with
to me.
How do you deal with visitors? So
how long has it been?
I found two resources that I wanted us to compare what the resources suggest you do with visitors, and let's compare that to what Jake did and see how he scores, okay?
Okay, let's do it!
All right, this first resource I found was titled, How to Manage Visitors Like... Okay, let me try that again.
Take two.
How to manage visitors like a Fortune 500 company in 6 steps.
Are you sure?
All right. So step number one, recognize visitors and make them comfortable. Did Jake do that? I think so. He offered tea. He let Melanie into his house.
There's tea.
Yes.
And when Cisco showed up, I mean, I don't know if he offered him tea or anything, but...
It was like raining outside.
Yeah.
All right.
So we're seeing if Jake Sr. treated his guest, his visitor, with respect.
According to, Fortune 500 company. Tip number two, identify the type of visitor. So what type of... So you got a time-traveling previously dead father.
What are you saying?
I'm just saying, these are the tips. Identify the type of visitor. All right, now here, I don't know, we don't know what his internal...
Wait, are we
was.
Talking about the visitor of Melanie or visitor Cisco?
Either way, in both cases.
In all visitors.
All right, how
I
about
know
this?
What to say.
This one I think he wasn't as good at. Visitor sign-in. There's no indicator that he has any sort of visitor sign-in.
No!
Not really. He had various weird things in his house.
Well, he kind of signed Cisco into sick bay when the second time Cisco visited.
Ah, well, that's a good point.
There you go.
So maybe he gets a half point.
You know, Cisco sees Jake age in probably the span of less than an hour Cisco time.
Yeah.
Like from young
to
old.
I like the idea of Cisco time.
That's why he has like the roughest time. This episode.
He's going to be fucking lost in subspace.
That's why he's all disappointed in his son. He's like, come on, what the fuck are you doing? Come on, I'm all fucked up over
here. And
then
in the end, he's all like, woo.
Yeah, he should be thankful because he'd be stuck in subspace.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to like his timeline? Does Melanie go on to be a great writer or is she just erased?
Let's get to that later because we have to finish this list. So step number four is to notify the host. I think he's the host. So self-notified, probably.
Notify the host. Okay.
Notify the host. Okay. Unless he meant to notify Dax.
Is the visitor supposed to notify the host?
No. When you are dealing with visitors, you should notify the host.
What if you're the host?
Well, then I think that
this
is a moot point.
Notification.
Unless it's referencing Dax or another Trill host. Like somebody
It's got to be a Trill. It's got to be a Trill host.
Yeah.
You got to stab him three times.
Step number five is visitor checkout. Now, this certainly with Cisco, this
somebody
did not happen.
Out.
There was no checkout procedure.
Yeah, the host checked out.
Cisco just, the host checked out at the end. I get where you're going. And then the last tip number six is maintain a visitor log. And I do think that Jake did this basically because of the pattern.
Is that like a sign-in?
Yeah, well, there's the sign-in, but then the visitor log is keeping track of this.
Right.
So, I don't know. That's how you treat visitors if you're a Fortune 500 company. How about seven hospitable tips for making guests feel welcome in your home?
Okay.
Greet them at the door.
Okay, he did that.
Yeah, except Cisco didn't show up at the door. He just showed up in random places.
Yeah, that was being a rude visitor.
Tip number two, don't tell them to take off their shoes. It's tip number two of seven hospitable tips for making guests feel welcome in your home. Don't tell them to take off their shoes.
Jake, I'm going to try shutting the excess power out through the deflector array.
And Jake,
I'm always kind of weirded out by that.
Jake did not do that. Tip number three is shake their hand.
Wait, how is this different than the Fortune 500? I'm so lost right now.
This is just, for welcoming guests in your home. Shake their hand.
Not a Fortune 500 company.
This is not, that was the previous list. Offer them a drink. Jake definitely did that with Melanie.
Oh, did you see that scene where there was the flashback? Oh, they was talking, and then they all clinked their glasses together, and then in the flashback with Nog, Karina, and Jake, adult, and they clinked their champagne glasses together, and then they did that thing where they immediately switched scenes to the cup of tea falling to the table and breaking. Because at first you think it's the champagne breaking, but then you're like, oh no, it's actually the teacup, and they're back at the Jake Senior moment, and that was when you realized, oh, there really is something wrong with that cup breaking. Meant that there was something actually wrong with Jake Senior. Well, because remember during the commercial break, they did a cheap tease for the commercial break.
When you're at the beach and there's a sign that says cheap tees.
Yeah.
T-shirts. Like cheap
tees. Oh, cheap
tees.
Okay. I thought you were just, going to be like, no, I have no idea what
you know.
Sometimes there's a sign up in the sky pulled by a.
Is that, or when player. you're at the shop and you go down a certain aisle and there's a sign that says cheap tees? It's like if you don't want to pay for like the twinings.
Cheap tees?
Like Tetley and shit.
All right, sure. Anyway. Continue your point.
What was your point?
That cheap tees I was talking about.
Oh, yes.
Which was
the cheap tees.
Which this line.
You see, I'm dying.
The one I've been playing. Yeah, that was actually right before a commercial break.
Yeah.
And then they came back from the commercial break and he's like,
I'm just fucking with you.
We're old men. We always got to say shit like that, you know? And so it was like a cheap tease. But it was a double cheap tease because he actually was dying. But that whole...
I just like how you said that, like you just revealed some like really, some, like, really important information.
You keep on saying there's no more time.
Look, David Livingston directed the hell out of
this episode.
If
that's what you're up to, you shouldn't have bothered.
The scene transitions were so great, and there was that particular one, the one that really, I like the teacup breaking one, but the one that really got me was when... right before it goes to the flashback of Jake Sr. thinking about his wife and then they're meeting with Nog, you see Tony Todd like suddenly look off in the corner. He like looks in the direction that his wife is walking in, and then it cuts to the totally different lighting. Mm-hmm. It's the only time you see the sunniness is because he's like finally happy in his life. You see his wife walk in. But if you look at the episode, there's this moment where Tony Todd looks over in the direction of where his wife is going to end up walking in when the scene was cut. Excellent job.
Yeah. Although I think that cheap deep tease was they just they did that because for the sake of the commercial break, because like they said he was dying and they came back. I'm explaining this again, but just to reiterate, just to get drive the point home, they
it's
said
got reiteration.
They said he was like, I'm dying, and you're supposed to, and then they come back. He's like, oh, old people, we're just old people, and you're like, ah, and but like he was dying all along. They just created that exchange, that one exchange about dying, that was purely for the sake of like stringing people along for the commercial break. That was a perfect example of how commercial breaks affect like the story. The
I 100% agree, because the thing was is you want to end the scene on an emotional cliffhanger, which is what they do, and then when you come back, you have to reset the emotions because they're going to continue the story, but you got to reset it down to a different level. 100% agree. Very good observation.
Fish.
A few more tips, hospitable tips. Start a conversation.
Fish.
Feed them a meal. I don't think Jake fed anybody. But
it's not
working. I think the most important part here, because this is advice that I really
fed Nog.
Truly advise.
Nog was a visitor.
Did Nog? Well, Nog. What was Nog?
Perfectly good slugs. 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 Fish.
That's the fish.
When these ones are crawling with perfectly good slugs. Fish. Perfectly good slugs. Perfectly good slugs. Fish.
No.
Did they ever say where Jake actually lives? I don't think they really.
They just said the bayou.
So he's down in.
Jake makes a reference at the beginning where. Where when Melanie arrives and she's like, I must have cut my hair head on a branch. And he's like, that'll happen if you're walking in the bayou. In the
it's rain. Still called Cisco's.
So Karina offered him some kind of red snapper fish. It was blackened red fish fresh from the bayou.
Red fish.
Oh, it said fresh from the bayou, so that is. But yeah, so Karina offered Nogfish, but that was when Nog was a visitor to Jake. Nogfish.
I've never had Nogfish before.
When Nog when Nog was wait, you've never had this fish?
Nog.
Nog.
Oh. Shit. Wait.
Come
a second.
On, okay, let's
you never had this fish before?
Chief O'Brien.
Nog.
Fish.
Nog.
Fish.
You've never had
Nog
fish
before? I love to eat blackened
Nog
fish
every night.
Every night.
So Karina offered Nog when he was a visitor. She offered him food, but that's not the visitor. We're not talking about Nog the visitor. We're talking about
either Melanie or Cisco.
Well, he's not the visitor that's in the title.
Yeah,
visitor.
But no. I don't think there's anything wrong there. There's still visitors to the house.
Yeah, he's still a visitor and he gets fed.
Dad?
Because he actually likes Nog.
The most important bit of advice in this list, 7 hospitable tips for making guests feel welcome in your home. The very final tip, the 7th tip, is send them home with a treat.
Cheap teas.
The treat in this case is that Cisco gets to live.
Like,
and the treat for Melanie is that she gets manuscripts that won't matter to her because the timeline's going to change.
Yeah, that's right.
He's all like, when you read these stories.
She wants to be a writer.
When you read these stories.
Can I have these instead?
Blah, blah, blah. Think of me. Yeah, that's all going to evaporate.
Because you want to be a writer someday.
But you won't get to be.
No.
Well, okay.
So yeah, does
this
that timeline go on?
This gets back. Here's the deal. That timeline does not happen. That does not mean that Melanie isn't born and that Melanie doesn't come across.
But she doesn't
Jake
get his notes.
Book. What it does mean is maybe, and I think quite probably, Jake Cisco writes more. Presumably, we can't assume that, but we may presume it. If you get the nuanced difference between the two propositions,
you can't assume, but you can presume.
I do not want to assume that Jake writes more as a result of the timeline shifting, because it shifts, but he still has trauma ahead in his life. But we maybe can presume that he writes more.
She said he was her favorite writer. But he only wrote 2 books, and one of them was just a bunch of short stories that he made. So it's not like it's kind of
some writers are like that.
They can still be your favorite writer.
Yeah.
Somebody could write
a paragraph, and you could be like, "Whoa!"
But he was writing.
This paragraph's so fucking great.
But he wasn't just being self-deprecating when he said,
"You should read more."
Yeah.
He does really have great delivery in this.
Tony Todd is fantastic.
Yeah,
he's just an amazing actor.
I lost my favorite pen, and I couldn't get any work done without it.
I know. I like that as well.
So yeah, he wrote. So he's just the collection of short stories. Both those. When he was asking Karina to design the covers. When we saw the covers of the books, they were some kind of weird like
hollow covers, digital covers,
digital hollow covers.
It was the '90s opinion of what things were going to. Because you got to remember, this is pre ebooks. Like you could get some proto digital versions of books, but this was pre Kindle.
Holograms.
This was 1995.
Hologram.
Holograms?
They were hollow covers. Hollow digital covers. They looked like a Kindle. Actually,
they looked like an LCD. They have very small LCD cover in an old book, which actually looked kind of awesome.
It kind of looked like a Kindle, the e-ink kind of situation, even though it wasn't.
Sort of.
It's kind of sort of.
Captain Picard's always reading some old book.
To me, it looked more like the LCD screen that you got on the old Toshiba laptops that was like kind of blue and gray, Toshiba. And you'd play Sopwith. You play Sopwith on the old, old laptops.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Playing some Sopwith.
Evidence.
Chief O'Brien.
One thing that's interesting about this episode is that, again, as we've mentioned, it's certainly very high, if not at the top of tons of people's lists of Star Trek episodes. But it's also.
Do you think it's better than Inner Light?
I mean, I personally do. I think I enjoy it. Yeah, I enjoy it.
I don't know. Inner Light, I got to say. I mean, first of all, I don't like saying like favorite of anything. Yeah. But I would say that if I had to sit and watch an episode 1,000 times in a row, I'd rather watch Inner Light 1,000 times in a row.
Jesus fucking Christ, 1,000 times.
How else are you going to measure it?
What's wrong with other you? People might be like 10 times in a row.
No, but I'm saying if you had to watch something 1,000 times, which would you enjoy the most after the 1,000th time back to back?
You've created an interesting scenario that I hadn't given much thought to, so I might have to get back to you on that.
What do you say, Jesse?
Episode of Star Trek? Or just episode of Deep Space Nine?
Episode of Star Trek? Episode of Star Trek? Episode of Star Trek? Nog!
I think Dan is presenting
episode of Star Trek?
Nog!
It's hard to keep up with this guy.
If you had to watch either The Visitor or The Inner Light...
Deal?
1,000 times in a row.
One of those, but not my own.
We're living in Dan's world, and we gotta go by his rules.
Deal.
Dan's got the biggest smile on his face. Dan's like, I'm...
When these ones are crawling with perfectly good slugs...
Dan is a consummate professional, of course, but I do like when he gets that look on his face when he's like, I'm aggravating so many people right now.
Go, Jake. Happened to you. Jake, what's happened to you?
Okay. I'm done.
Jake's old.
The Inner Light, the sci-fi concept is more interesting. It's more clever. Okay, Dan's just literally vibrating. Dan wants to push the button so hard. Dan, okay, how about this? We got a few more minutes left in this break, and then when we come back, you can push as many buttons as you want, because it's third break, and everything goes in the third break.
Anything goes.
The first break, we got the news and mups and stuff. Second break, we got fun and mups.
My favorite part in Anything Goes is when the trombone goes like, burp.
I believe you've recounted this too.
And the trumpet goes.
Yes, you've explained this to the audience before, and to Jesse and I on even more occasions.
I played that part.
You guys did that in high school, didn't you?
Yeah, I played the trombone part there. It was my favorite because it's just trombone going. Anyway, you know what it's hot. You know what I'm talking about.
All right.
Okay, I'm sorry. Please go. Jesse, you didn't answer the question, though.
I think he was declining to answer the question.
I don't know if I can answer that question.
Fish!
I was trying to think of if there was another episode that I could watch 1,000 times.
Okay, that's a good segue. So here's an episode you can't watch 1,000 times that is directly connected to this episode, because I was trying to make a cute little point about this episode being so high on people's lists. But... it is referenced later in season 4 in one of my least favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine, because Deep Space Nine does not have a lot of clunkers. The one that is, from in my view, not a great episode is The Muse. And that's in that episode, is when Jake begins writing the book Anselm.
Oh, I was going to say, because I remember Anselm came up again later.
And it's because there's an alien lady who slurps on creative juices.
Right.
And, and she sort of sucks them out. And so he starts writing the book and he gets addicted to the creative flow because she basically removes his writer's block.
Right.
But she's slurping his brain juices. Right. And it's bad. Now, that episode has some positive aspects to it. It's got some Loxana and Odo stuff that's really, really good.
Oh yeah, yeah, so that is good. Odo's super uncomfortable, right?
Well, I mean, there's a few times. This is this is a later on one, but the point is there's some good character stuff in there, but the main plot with Jake is pretty lame, mm-hmm. and it's just, and even the producers and writers were like, yeah, that one kind of didn't turn out. You know, we were going for something, and it didn't quite work out the way we wanted. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, that was also directed by David Livingston.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was disappointed with that episode.
No.
So it's kind of funny where you have like this brilliant episode in The Visitor and then a kind of a big old clunker, and they're connected by this particular factoid.
Speaking of Jake writing, there was that other episode where Jake and Nog live together, yes. and it was the odd couple. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting in that episode how Nog was all like correcting Jake's like grammar and spelling.
Yes.
You'd think like a writer would have his grammar and spelling down. Unless Jake, because Jake did say in that episode, he was like, you never correct a writer, like a writer's grammar or whatever. So maybe Jake meant to write things like that on purpose. Yeah. I would say that though, except Nog did say I corrected your spelling, and you'd think that like he'd at least get a spelling.
Well,
down.
Okay.
Nog's a bit of a Starfleet stooge at this point.
But I mean, yeah, like, but right. Jake should have known how to do that already.
No. I'm totally on Jake's side because first of all, when you're writing dialogue or even not dialogue, it's perfectly reasonable stylistically to write in a grammatically incorrect way.
No, that's what I'm saying. Spelling, but spelling. I agree with the grammar part.
It's a two-part thing. You said you two parts, and I'm talking about my two parts. I also don't care about the spelling because, again, yeah, you can go fix that later. When you're writing, you're just trying to write it out. Mm. It's aggravating if you stop the flow of your thinking to correct spelling error because you can always correct the spelling later unless you've spelled something so colossally hilariously wrong that you can't tell what the word is.
I would have liked the episode better if he just said corrected your grammar. I would have been more accepting of that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'm glad we appreciate that comment you have about a totally separate episode.
My sweet boy.
All right, how about this? It's about time to take another break. I say we go ahead and do that.
It's about time.
You keep on saying there's no more time.
We're going to take that break. And then when we get back, we will conclude our discussion of the very hilarious Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 4 episode, The Visitor. Be right back. Okay, we're back.
I felt vaguely ridiculous.
I bet you did. That's how I feel.
I felt like less vaguely, more clearly.
Ridiculous. I feel overtly ridiculous today. Yes. Cirroc Lofton was always great as Jake. He's really good in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I know he splits the Jake duties with.
You said duty.
He splits the Jake duties.
He split the Jake duties with a knife.
Gross.
It wouldn't go down the hole, so he had to split it with a knife. And then it got that broken duty smell.
No. On his duty knife.
On his duty knife.
Dan's a coprophagiac.
There wasn't enough water in the bowl either, so it smelled even worse.
What I was trying to get at is that yes, Cirroc Lofton is great. He did have to split duties with Tony Todd playing Jake, but he's given a lot to do here, and I was very impressed. Him playing the
scene with him and Kira was pretty intense, you know.
And it's all in the shadows,
uh-huh.
and they actually kind of mimic that. We see a similar shot at the end of Deep Space Nine. It's similarly framed with Jake and Kira looking out a pylon window. He's this interesting character because, especially from the beginning, part of the point of Jake was this is just a regular guy. He's a regular kid to begin with, and he grows into a regular guy.
he grows into a regular guy.
Well, you know what I'm saying? They were
please don't make me leave.
They were aggressively going the opposite direction of Will Wheaton's Wesley Crusher.
Yeah.
Right?
Don't leave me!
from the beginning, Jake was not a superhero. He's not a super genius, whatever. But at the same time, he's very talented. And he does have this talent at writing. And he does journalism throughout the show. And then he does, writing these fiction stories and stuff. And that's a hard line to walk. But I thought that Sir Rock Lofton always did a really good job of being that regular guy who's also got some cool talents. But he's not... Again, he's not saving the world like with his talents. He's just a really good writer, and I've always appreciated that. And I thought that this episode had some real highlights.
Yeah,
totally.
I like how even Quark sacrificed profits so he could help Jake feel better by letting him go to the hall suite.
I like that. That was a good little.
It was interesting.
And then of course Morn all like is all like, it's okay there, buddy.
And then later taking over the bar.
Oh, yeah.
I like all these little glimpses of this alternate future we get.
Morn is still there, running the bar.
Talking his customers' ears off and drinking himself out of business.
Exactly. It's a classic Morn joke.
But what they did very... Also, I also thought that they did very well, since a lot of this episode deals with the process of mourning. And an aberrant version of that process. But
the process of mourning is when you look like you're a character that never talks, but the joke is you talk all the time. That's mourning.
I deserve that. I deserve that for not being more careful about how I phrase things.
You're joking.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Pleasure is mine. You're a good listener. Pleasure is mine. Joking. You're a good listener.
But... they are able, in these very brief moments, able to convey some of those...
I'm not joking, Lee.
some of those things.
I'm not joking, Lee. I'm not joking, Lee.
Sorry.
Just strange energies.
Okay, so the scene with Quark and Nog, Nog is doing the waiting and all that other stuff. Yes, Quark is being nice. It's a really fun example of him... like you said, even giving up profit. But it also kind of demonstrates how Jake is sitting there and life is going back to normal. It's that classic
issue
of like...
He's looking all bummed.
Well, yeah, because his life has not gone back to normal. It's not going to go back to normal. But everything around him, everyone's like, okay, yeah. Everyone loved Captain Sisko. Everyone thought that Sisko was this amazing person. I mean, he was a fucking god to a whole planet of people. But even the Bajorans they're like, okay, we're moving on. And they were able to fairly subtly demonstrate how everyone, Dax, Bashir, everyone is moving on from Sisko dying, even after...
Damn.
Oh, my God. Yes, well, you've undercut my dramatic point there a little bit, but yeah, I think the audience knows what I'm getting at. They did a good job of showing, it sucks when you're stuck with a temporal, dead person.
A temporal dead person.
Sort of dragging along, pseudo-dead person, but then everyone else is like, well, we got to go back to work.
Yeah, right, everything's back to
normal. We got shit to do.
But he's still, just wallowing in
his world
thing.
Is fucking fucked up.
Yeah. Do you think that, because he was talking about how he got into Dom Jot, he said Dax and Kira and them were worried about him. Do you think they were worried about him in the sense that he looked like he was bummed out all the time? Or do you think he was hitting the hollow sweets and booze too hard, basically?
They
didn't mention that.
They didn't say
Dom
that.
Jot,
but they, yeah, but, they, but usually, Jot. But sometimes when people say, they're worried about him, it means that they're
playing a lot of pool.
Yeah, he's playing, and he talked about Dom Jot.
Yeah, it's so, maybe he's in that environment.
He's in this environment. Yeah, exactly. He's in this environment where he's trying to forget his troubles so much that he's just like
trouble
and bathing in
River City.
That's right. There's trouble right here in River City. That's such a great song. The Music Man. Everyone should go watch The Music Man 1962. It's a film. It's a musical film.
Monorail.
Yeah, the monorail is a takeoff of The Music Man.
It's not in the show.
It has that famous 76 trombones, and you played trombone, Dan.
Yeah, on Anything Goes, my favorite part was when the trombone goes...
Oh, I didn't know that. How did that go again? Is the beginning... as a result of this affinity you have for that particular trombone beat...
I like it even more than going...
Trombone riff.
I like it even more than going... It's even better than that.
As a result of that is...
Even better than that?
Is the opening scene of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom your favorite opening scene of any movie ever? Because
you're running from The Rock?
Huh?
What?
No,
Temple
that's,
of Doom is,
that's Raiders of
like
the Lost
Dwayne Johnson's all chasing
no,
him down.
No, Temple of Doom is...
He's chasing him. Dwayne Johnson's chasing him through a temple.
No, yes. In
Do you smell what I'm cooking?
Temple of Doom, he's in...
I hate snakes!
He's in Hong Kong, and they're doing the whole Anything Goes.
Oh,
opening.
That's right. I forgot about
in
that.
Chinese,
yeah.
A Chinese
yeah,
version.
I totally
of any,
forgot
anything
about
goes.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It was a pleasure.
All right. Okay.
When Quark like tells Nog that he can go in the holosuite with Jake, Nog's all like, "Are you sure?" Like, okay, when was the last time anyone followed up? Like, when someone grants somebody something, there's like, oh, you can do this, or you don't have to do your chores tonight. When someone follows it up with, are you sure? When in the history of anything has anyone ever been like, you know what? No, I'm not sure. You better get back to work right now.
You know what? On second thought.
On second thought, oh, you don't have to do your homework tonight. Are you sure? You know what? You do have to do your homework.
It's a requirement.
What was I thinking?
Is this part of your, are you putting together a stand-up set, or...
I'm just. I'm when like, was the last time?
Well, you're making an observation that requires us to believe that you are not familiar with the context, like sort of just basic cultural tropes, little routines, little rituals that people go through.
But yeah, but people should. That one's a waste of time. You shouldn't say, "Are you sure?" when someone says you can do something, because like I understand it's the polite thing to do.
No, I think what you might be missing in the case of the "Are you sure?" interaction is that the purpose is not to actually confirm permission, but is to accentuate the fact that you are
grateful, right?
That you are,
and I
like,
think it's a little much.
Okay, that's a fair. It is a fair point. I think just as we should understand that there are a lot of these little cultural rituals that we go through, I think it's perfectly okay to critique them.
It's not working.
Oh, speaking of which, elderly yeah, Bashir was very silly.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was really awesome. So silly. But he was like, he looked like Don Knotts.
Yeah,
he looked like really old.
His pants were like super high up.
Yeah.
And he was having way too much fun playing the silly, goofy, skinny old elderly person.
Yeah, when Dax is all like, it's the only thing that's kept me awake while you prattled on about your latest paper or your new backhand or your kid's science project. And he all starts chuckling like,
yeah.
And he, like, even when he's talking, he's kind of like shaking in this like kind of elderly way. Like it's over right. the top, but it's pretty awesome. I love it. Yeah, he's the only one that, yeah, he looks like a goofy old man. I didn't understand like what the use of was having a ladder in the Defiant in that engineering style room or whatever room that was. They had a ladder there. How do those old folks, another unrealistic, talking about elderly people, just like Jake Sr. sitting on that ottoman when he's elderly, being able to get up. How is elderly Bashir, elderly Dax supposed to get up and down that ladder in that Defiant, the one that Nog came down? Now, I can understand why Nog can do it, because he's a sprightly young fellow. Well, actually, he's a sprightly old fellow. But you know what I'm saying? That, oh, do you remember that there was that ladder?
He's pretty sprightly.
Well, isn't he?
He was sprightly.
Bashir's got a, you know, he's enhanced, right?
He is enhanced.
I also don't assume that the ladder is the only way into that engineering department.
Then why bother having it?
I mean, it's a question that's unanswerable, because it's like, why bother having things?
Style.
Like, I'm just saying, you need things.
Ask the person that designed.
That's
the
what
Defiant.
I'm saying, though. Is like, why would you design a ship that required that is not like an accessible?
I don't. I think there's other doors. I
it's
think
more
maybe
like
it's just
old
to go
Star
that. Maybe
Trek.
It's just to get into that.
They
Jeffrey's
had that on
tube
old school Star Trek.
They have it on Deep Space Nine station.
Yeah, they
as
have
well.
It on like submarines and aircraft
it's
carriers.
It's more like
too.
Submarine-y.
Yeah, but you're not going to get like an elderly person with knee problems and things.
Well,
in
yeah,
this
they're not
kind
supposed
of,
to be. Elderly yeah, people I mean, aren't supposed to be in the fleet.
But
man.
But that they are in Star Trek.
You're complaining about this very specific.
I think they brought those guys back.
Yeah, that was
for
a whole
special
like,
mission.
Yeah.
This was like a.
They were getting the gang back together. It was like Blues Brothers.
Star Trek
space.
6 or something.
Yeah. The gang back together. I mean, so I'm just guessing that they couldn't access that part of the ship because they were too old.
Well, all right. Well, we'll have to look at some of the ship designs, the schematics of the Defiant.
Schematics.
Get some more
what do the blueprints say?
I thought that the setting of Jake's house in the bayou, I thought that it was really wonderful set design. It was so evocative because we never see anything outside, but we still feel like we're in the swamp is out there.
Yeah.
It's all out there, like all the trees and the rain. And it was just constantly raining, except for that one day where he was happy.
That one day.
Like one brief moment of happiness where it was all sunny.
There were two there are two tear dripping moments from like Jake in 4 minutes 28 seconds. There was a tear when he first sat down with Melanie on his right eye. There's tear, this big sort of teardrop, bead of teardrop just flies down the right side of his face. And then at the end of the episode, at Mark 43:12, when he's talking with Cisco and he's talking about dying, Jake, he goes like, "For you and the boy that I was," when he says "for you," and then the big tear falls down his face, and the boy that I was. I'm wondering if that was actual tear or if they just took eyedroppers to his face, because that looked like some beaded up tear.
I think Tony Todd can do the real tears.
That was a crucial tear.
I think so. I was reading about Tony Todd about 3 months before filming this. A beloved aunt died, somebody he was very close to.
It sucks.
And he was thinking about, you know, the grieving process with her, so it was probably helpful for him.
That's how you do it.
Yeah. I mean, this is a tear. I was tearing up through many times.
It was a hard one to watch.
And I've seen this episode a bunch of times, and every single time, I'm like at the exact same points. I'm like,
Dad?
Jake.
Dad? Jake?
No!
Jake. You okay, Dad?
Nog.
Nog!
A duck.
Did you...
A duck!
All right.
Move along.
Did you notice the TAS style framing they had in that one shot where it showed like it was all like the O'Brien's like face was all, it was all like zoomed in on O'Brien's, like half of his face was all like up in the front of the camera.
Oh, which scene?
It's a very brief scene where it's O'Brien. It's not when they're super old later. It's when it's O'Brien and Dax, and I think it's in sick bay when they're like trying to deal with what's going on. And it's just they're trying to do the containment field. Like standing in an arc, but O'Brien is all like right up at the front, like really TAS style, wild stuff.
I'll have to watch that again.
Wild Stallions.
A duck.
I did like, you know, you were hinting at it before, Dan, but I like the fact that they set up the story where you think the resolution is going to be the temporal inversion coming back, right? You're like, oh, that's going to be the classic Star Trek way they solve this. And it's like, nope, no, it's not. In fact, it's even more upsetting than it was before.
I need to know you're going to be all right.
And then Jake refused to promise. You know, that was another powerful part where like he's like, "Please promise me you'll like
promise me you'll do that." And promise
Jake,
me.
Jake is like, "Nope."
And actually, it's twice. It happens. Once in that subspace fragment, and then before in the house, in his house when he was adult Jake, not senior or young Jake. Both times. Cisco's basically says the same.
Two times.
He says basically like, move on with your life. And both times, he won't fucking say it. So, right.
That reminds me.
That part was pretty upsetting.
That reminds me of when my mother first came to the United States from Europe.
Europe.
And she wanted to order.
European?
She wanted.
Yeah, I'm a peon too.
I'm half a peon. And she wanted to order.
I was just
two hot and sour soups at the Chinese restaurant. She wanted to order two hot and sour soups. But in German, the way you would say that is zweimal hot and sour soup, two times hot and sour soup. So she transliterated that into English, and she
transliterated.
Transliterated. I think transliterated.
Wouldn't it just be translated?
No. Translated is transliterated because she applied the German grammar, but used the English word, so she kept saying she wanted two times hot and sour
soup. You're right, you got me, boy.
And the person
you got me, Patrick,
taking the order was confused.
Extra hot.
What did she mean, twice the size, right? Or like
she ordered a double soup.
It was an interesting interaction that she had early on. But you reminded me of that, and thank you for that.
Thank you for teaching me about transliteration.
Yeah. Next week, we're going to learn about transubstantiation. It's going to be...
Oh, no.
What happened?
It's going to be great.
Can I have these instead?
We touched on it briefly, but I thought it'd be interesting just to discuss a little bit more about this timeline divergence, right? This whole timeline goes away, and that made me kind of think philosophically, you're Jake, you... are hoping this plan works. This plan has been in the works for a long time, that you're going to wait until your father reappears and kill yourself to sever the connection and reset everything.
Boy, I spent a lot of faith in that theory.
Well, here's the thing, right? So he really desperately wants that to work. He's hoping it works. I find it so fascinating about how you could be motivated to keep writing and keep doing stuff other than just waiting. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like, he didn't keep writing. He quit at 37.
No, but the point was is that he did keep writing after that last time he saw his dad.
He wrote some more, yeah.
He did write some. Yeah, the whole end. Remember, he offers stories. Her, she wants to take his notes and stuff.
That's all right.
New stuff that
you're
he
right.
wrote.
Yeah.
And all of that.
Yeah, no, you're right. That is kind of fucked up.
It's gonna just evaporate.
Yeah.
And I think I would hope that in a similar situation, I would be motivated to do it anyway, because in a way it's just describing reality, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the sun's going to explode. No one's going to know about Mozart in X number of years. Anything we are doing is ephemeral, and any meaning is not derived externally. It's only derived from the meaning that we create within ourselves and among each other in our communities. We craft those meanings, but they all will disappear and be gone.
I mean,
really, realistically, within a couple generations, nobody will remember who we are, right?
I mean, if you were stranded on some planet somewhere and it was just you, and you know that, like, you were going to die alone, would you bother creating? Is it just, or because it's just something that you have to do because it's ingrained in who you are?
I think that's going to be, it's going to depend on the person. Yeah. It's going to depend on the person. And I'd hope I'm the kind of person that would be compulsively creative.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I would hope that
usually
I'm like that too.
I think
I don't
that's
know.
How it is. You're just compelled to create stuff. It doesn't matter if anybody else is going to.
I mean, we are effectively like God. We're like God.
Yeah, we are. We're
just
God.
Creating stuff. Once
like
a every week we create something.
We don't play God, like they say. It's like we're not playing God. We are God.
We are the effective equivalent of gods.
Mm-hmm.
Podcast gods.
Yeah. It's like Radio Gods. That was a Don and Mike reference. Don and Mike was a radio show.
It was a syndicated radio show that was popular in the Washington, D.C. area. Because
Radio
the,
Gods.
Radio.
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 Spy Report. Spy Report.
Scrotums in the news. Good old Buzz Burbank.
So the tensions with the Klingons were beginning to rise.
I like all this alternative stuff. It's interesting.
Do you think that happened as a result of Sisko? Okay, probably twofold. One was because the Bajorans left Kira outright stated that the Bajorans were like, fuck this shit.
The Federation's not going to help us.
Yeah, and so they left. So the Klingons saw weakness there. Mm-hmm. But they probably also just saw weakness, not even just that, just the absence of Sisko represented weakness.
Yeah.
That the Klingons they could exploit.
The other thing they mention is that the Bajorans get into a mutual defense treaty with the fucking Cardassians, right?
Oh, right.
They're trying to tell us this is not a great future.
Yeah,
like this is not going well for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's all because Sisko wasn't there to keep things in order.
It's like It's a Wonderful Life, except it's a not so wonderful temporal displacement.
It really rolls off the tongue.
Well, it does.
It's really a not so wonderful temporal displacement inside the subspace fragment.
Oh, and by the way, another thing I was thinking about while watching this episode was, you know, you're watching sci-fi, you're watching Star Trek, and
don't tell me what I watch.
No, I'm setting the scene here, Dan. You're watching the shows and they deal with a lot of different, you know, heavy topics and stuff, and often they just sort of go in your brain, and your brain is in I'm watching TV mode. It's like, I'm not thinking too hard. I'm just watching TV. Oh, this is an interesting story. Oh, they're talking about a genocide. Oh, they're talking about war. They're talking about this.
When Picard had to decide whether or not he wanted to genocide the Borg.
The Borg situation. All right.
That really told you like who Picard really was. Right. Any other captain probably would have gone ahead and done it. For better or for worse, the Borg could have been gone and we could have been rid of all these problems. But because it was Picard,
it was the
right thing to do, but at what cost?
So, is
it always worth doing the right thing?
So, what I'm getting at is sometimes
I think
it's helpful to pull back and really consider the weight of the topics that are being discussed. Because, like I said, again, you can have like, oh, here's an episode where like we're vaporizing half the planet. Ha ha ha! That's funny, and you just don't think about it. In this episode, among all the stressful things that we have to watch, watching a son think that his father has died in front of him, dealing with the stress of his father keeps reappearing in his life and all this other
Chief
stuff.
Chief O'Brien.
Then we get to see Captain Sisko has to watch his son commit suicide.
Oh yeah, in front of,
that's a fucked up shit. Yeah. It's like Captain Sisko's like, oh my poor son. Yeah. It's like, what are we watching?
And then everything goes back to normal, and Sisko's the only one that remembers.
Well,
right?
And that's my question. I had a question for both of you: how much does
haunted
he remember?
How haunted would he
be
by
because
that?
I'm of the view, because at the end they leave it a little ambiguous, because Sisko, you know, Jake says, whatever you do, just avoid the charge or whatever. Yeah. Sisko goes back, he dives, and then he's like,
doesn't die, he dives.
Dives. And then Jake is like, oh my God, how'd you see that? And Sisko's like, I guess we just got lucky. And then he gives this look. To me, the look says he remembers everything.
I guess we were just lucky this time.
But I have seen interpretations, and I think that is justified, that some people say, like, well, as soon as he changed the history, as soon as he jumped out of the way, like, the memories sort of go away.
I mean, I hope they
would.
And
that maybe there's, you would, like, for his sake.
Because, like you said, not only does he watch his son commit suicide, but he watches his son age into an old man in the span of, like...
A bitter, sad old man.
Sad old man who wasted, wasted is a strong word, but, like, basically got distracted from his life goals because he died in that mission. Yeah. So Sisko's got to feel...
Which is sort of the worst way a parent would feel, is, like, if I fucked up my kid's life.
Yeah, because of my job and did this. And not only that, it happened for Sisko in the span of, like, we don't know how long, but we can assume it's about an hour, maybe.
Probably less, honestly. I think it's probably, like, 23 minutes.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It's, like, a real fucking intense 23 minutes.
Yeah, and then you hit it, it's like, you watch your son age and get sadder and sadder, and it all, like, climaxes with him fucking killing himself. Yes. Yeah. So I hope he doesn't remember. I assumed he did remember, but I don't know.
It's the way he says, I am now at the end.
Like,
I don't know
like when he said, like, I'll play this again.
I guess we were just lucky this time.
I mean, it's hard to say.
Yeah, but there's a line after that. I don't know if you probably don't have it, but it's the very last line, basically, where it's like, I think Jake is like, Dad, are you okay or whatever? And he's like, I am now.
Yeah.
And there was so much emotion in that I think it's, that wouldn't make sense some degree of memory of the events.
It's like,
I am now Jake. I am now.
Yeah, that one.
To me, that
means... I am now.
That means I remember all this fucked up shit.
You okay, Dad?
Yeah, and the way Jake says... And even the way Jake says...
You okay, Dad?
It's all like... It's like it never happened.
Exactly,
because of course, it didn't happen. But the way he says it, it's like, hey, Dad, you cool, man?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he's all... Cool. Yeah, it's kind of a bummer, man.
That's a bummer, man.
I am now Jake.
Everything's back to
I am now.
I think that's covered most of what I was thinking about this episode. It's an interesting sci-fi premise. Again, it's not the most complex sci-fi premise, because really the premise is there to create this scenario of, like, what would you do in this situation where you're justified in not letting go of somebody, but it is impacting your life in this negative way. But in the end, you know, it's all reset. It's kind of like Year of Hell style.
I don't think this episode should have been a two-parter or even a season long.
You think this episode is just fine?
It's just fine. All as right, one
this,
parter.
Okay, this episode gets the Dan seal of approval
for just one episode. I don't think we needed to go through a whole season of this.
All right, yeah, because that is for those who are not in the know. Dan often suggests either stretching an episode out to a whole season, or
that would be like Discovery, Discovery season,
or not doing it at all,
or not doing it at all.
The Red Angel.
Why didn't they either go all in or not at all?
Yeah.
I like the I don't know if it quite qualifies as a MacGuffin or what you'd call it, but like the interphasic compensator.
Yes, Jake's all looking for it.
It like looks like a cross between a laser rifle and a big dumb Allen wrench.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is the thing that's gonna save our ship. Ka-chunk.
And I guess it's more the latter than the former.
Yeah. Yeah, it is more the latter.
It totally is.
But yeah, it was a big dumb looking thing. But yeah, that was just kind of like, this is the thing that you put in to save the ship when it's gonna blow up.
It's like, why wasn't it just hanging on the wall? Like,
yeah.
Because it got knocked off the wall.
It should have been hanging off the thing that you stick it into.
It
should have been like a fucking, like...
Or just right in it already.
Right,
like,
yeah.
It should have just been in there.
I wonder
how often this type of thing happens. Because, like, we wouldn't know. Because especially if people keep resetting it. Although, maybe not always.
Oh, right.
Not everyone's as clever as old man Jake.
Well, it was a subspace inversion that only happens once every 50 years.
Well, on that particular wormhole.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it happens at other wormholes or in other... other formats.
Man, subspace is great. It's not just like a tool, a device that allows people to communicate without bogging down the plot. It can also create new plots, such as this.
Yes, it can. It can indeed. And I do respect writers.
I'm cool with subspace.
No. I respect writers taking the environment.
I'm cool with subspace.
Taking the environment that's been built over the years, the world building that's happened, and then using those elements to tell a story. I'm not critical of the Voyager and some other styles of focusing more on the plot. I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. I tend to fall more on the characterization side. I like the stories that are more about like how characters interact and the interesting tales that come up when you put like Odo and Kira and their personalities together, and then you create a natural story out of that. I tend to enjoy those more. And I think this is a good example of a great story that emerged from a little of the techno babble and a lot of the characters that we've learned about, you know, with Sisko and Jake in particular, what we've learned about them from the first episode of Deep Space Nine to this point, and how their relationship works and how close their relationship is. I think it's an interesting story.
I think the Inner Light I really like just because it's a really touching episode. Like this is two, but in a different way. There's more despair in this one.
Yeah, like, but I, maybe that's why I like this episode a little bit more. Like
I like the Inner Light, the concept of Picard.
What do you like to touch when you're watching?
Myself, Jesse.
Yeah. Are you touching yourself when you watch it?
Especially when I think about you. Oh. I touch myself. I don't know. Like,
I help you find your inner light.
And then just like the idea. Gross.
I know that's gonna hurt.
I like, you know, the whole thing of Picard like living a whole lifetime.
As a sci-fi concept, I think that's a more interesting actual sci-fi story. The idea of somebody as a mechanism for continuing your culture.
As a sci-fi concept, that's neat. But even that whole concept, The Inner Light is also another episode that uses sort of like the vehicle of sci-fi to actually tell a character story.
Of course. Oh, no, absolutely. 100%.
I don't know. They're both good episodes.
They are both. And Dan, you're not alone. Many people would put Inner Light right at the very top of the list. And now we have to return to your new rubric that you've created, which is like, if you had to watch it 1,000 times in a row, what would you watch? I don't know if there's any episodes of Star Trek I would be willing to endure 1,000 times in a row. It'd be pretty intense. A movie. Maybe I'd watch Star Trek 6,000 times in a row. I think I might be able to handle that. Star Trek 6 is pretty badass.
I'd do that. Jesse, would you do that?
1,000?
Yeah. I think we could do that. You know why? I think
1,000 is a lot. Man.
You know,
Jesse, Dan's setting up a joke here. He's setting up an end of a show.
No, I'm not.
He's messing
with us.
Yes,
you are, because I see your hand hovering over.
I was just gonna play like this whole. They did this. They bookended. They sandwiched the episode with this thing.
It seems to me I'd want to poke my head up every once in a while and take a look around, see what's going on. What's life, Jake? You can miss it if you don't open your eyes.
And then at the end,
while you're studying my stories, poke your head up every once in a while. Take a look around. See what's going on. It's life, Melanie.
And you can miss it if you don't open your eyes.
That implies that he put that in a book somewhere. They didn't actually say that outright, but that, because she...
And you can miss it.
She knows how to finish it. It must be in one of his janks.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah.
That's me.
But I think all of us would watch Star Trek 6,000 times because you know why?
See, I told you, Jesse.
Because you know why?
Because he had this joke and he's trying to distract us with this other thing.
Why?
Because...
We're dangerous.
Oh, no. That's okay. That was worth it. That is a quote from Star Trek Enterprise's episode Detained.
We're dangerous.
Which we discussed a few weeks ago.
We're dangerous.
It sounds like he's being such more douchey than he actually is. He's actually being like, oh yeah, you don't trust us because we're so dangerous. Yeah. But it sounds like he's being like, yeah, don't fuck with us. Yeah.
We're dangerous.
Yeah, but he's not. He's really just being like, oh, I know what you guys think. You think we're dangerous, but we're really not.
Scroll back in the feed a couple episodes and you can listen to that. That was a good episode. All right, that's it for this episode. We're done.
Get
we're
the done hell with the visitor.
Great episode.
Good listener.
It's always difficult to the really brilliant episodes are the ones that are sometimes the hardest to talk about. It's fun to talk about the silly episode. Well,
Fish.
Thank you, Dan. That's it for this week.
Next time we go ion surfing, remind me to keep clear of those whip curls.
Next week, we don't know what we're talking about next week because we have to have Dan's algorithm churn this episode. It'll ingest this episode, churn it around a bit, and it'll spit out a list of episodes that we should watch.
What was that Deep Space Nine where they build like a wooden spaceship or something?
Oh, the Explorers, I think it's called. Yeah, that's where they build a Bajoran sail ship.
Let's see if we can guess which ones are the old Bashir.
There'll be a path of breadcrumbs to follow.
Is that old or young Bashir?
You know, I like this game. Young Bashir.
I'm going
to
go with
There'll be a path of breadcrumbs to follow.
That's old Bashir.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
That's another one.
A path.
It's not working.
Young Bashir.
That's young Bashir.
Middle age, yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
For old time's sake.
That's old Bashir.
You can tell by the line.
Old time's sake.
It's working.
Okay. What's not working is my figuring out how to end this episode.
We're losing them both.
It's over. Get out.
Feedback. They're being pulled into subspace.
Emails.
Since the accident created a subspace link between him and Jake.
Wait, this is the best old one. This really sounds old.
Since the accident created a subspace link between him and Jake, there'll be a path of breadcrumbs to follow.
Jake.
Right. Send emails to feedback@discussstartrek.com. Website is
I thought you liked that game. Why'd you end it early if you liked it?
Well, because we gotta end the podcast. It's podcast is over. We can play that game. We can play more of that game next week, or a similar or a variation on that game.
No.
www.itsgotstartrek.com. Voicemails at itsgotstartrek.com/record. Or MP3s, social media at It's Got Star Trek.
Feedback.
YouTube, Facebook.
Feedback.
Twitter, all that other good stuff. With that, we'll bid you a lovely adieu.
You keep on saying there's no more time.
Matutaleo. Goodbye. Ciao. Avita Sane.
Thank you.
Arrivederci. Sayonara.
Scram.
Till next week.
Let's go.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Did you start the grill?
Mm-hmm. Oh, what are we having?
Black and red fish, fresh from the bayou.
Fish? When these ones are crawling with perfectly good slugs?
I suppose you're going to ask me to chew your food for you.
I have to admit, I've been more popular with women since I stopped asking them to do that.
I tried to tell you that 20 years ago.
I'm a slow learner.